Shri Radha Krishna Gogo Pinash Vamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki
Jai
Vrindavan Dham Ki
Jai
Dura Dham Ki
Jai
Abhijit Mayapur Dham Ki
Jai
Jagannath Puri Dham Ki
Jai
Gangamai Juna Devi Ki
Jai
Bhakti Devi Ki
Jai
Tulsi Maharani Ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki
Jai
Gaur Premanand All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada, Mahaprabhu, Vishnu Gadaya, Vishnu Sthagavi, Sri Mati Bhakti, Vedanta Swami, Niti Namane. Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gauravani, Pachami, Nirase, Sasana, Vana, Paskatyabha, Satyami, Vandeham, Sri Guru, Sri Vitapada Kamalam, Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajakam, Sahagana, Agana, Thambu, Panchkam, Sajiva. Sadvaitam, Sadvaditam, Parijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahagana, Lalita, Sri Vishakam, Vitam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. September 14, 2013, in Honolulu, Hawaii. We're looking at Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Text 6, Text 48. Yasmin yada pushkara nabamayaya durantyaya sprita diya pritagdusha kurvanti tatra hiya nu kampaya kritam nasadavo daiva balat krite kraman. My dear Lord, if in some places materialists who are already bewildered by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Godhead sometimes commit offenses, a saintly person with compassion does not take this seriously. Knowing that they commit offenses because they are overpowered by the illusory energy, he does not show his prowess to counteract them. Purport. It is said that the beauty of a tapasvi or saintly person is forgiveness. There are many instances in the spiritual history of the world in which many saintly persons, although unnecessarily harassed, did not take action, although they could have done so. Parikshit Maharaj, for example, was unnecessarily cursed by a Brahmin boy, and this was very much regretted by the boy's father. But Parikshit Maharaj accepted the curse and agreed to die within a week as the Brahmin boy desired. Parikshit Maharaj was the emperor and was full in power, both spiritually and materially. But out of compassion and out of respect for the Brahmana community, he did not counteract the action of the Brahmin boy, but agreed to die within 7 days. Because it was desired by Krishna that Parikshit Maharaj agreed to the punishment so that the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam would thus be revealed to the world, Parikshit Maharaj was advised not to take action. A Vaishnava is personally tolerant for the benefit of others. When he does not show his prowess, this does not mean that he is lacking in strength. Rather, it indicates that he is tolerant for the welfare of the entire human society.
I hope you can tolerate.
We're going to have to do this again?
Yeah.
With
you
the
can
ear?
Just...
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you very much. It's got to be plugged in because no power.
No problem.
Thank you. That's as far as it goes.
That's as far as it goes. Well, then this should.
You want to put it over?
So Srila Prabhupada is referencing here the story of Maharaj Parikshit. He goes into a hut asking for water. The sage appears to be meditating. Maharaj Parikshit thinks that the sage is faking it. He thinks that he's just pretending not to notice in order to offend him. And then when the sage doesn't answer, doesn't give him any water, or even say hello, or open his eyes, he picks up a dead snake and puts it on the sage's neck. And then the sage's son, seeing this dead snake on his father's neck, curses the emperor to die within 7 days. So Srila Prabhupada, in the context of that story, he says this is tit for tat, and he says that this is silly. Prabhupada uses the word silly. You know, You hurt me, I hurt you, you hurt me, I hurt you, you hurt me, I hurt you. So why do we do this? Why when somebody has wronged us, or when we're convinced somebody has wronged us, do we want to hurt them in return? Some ideas. What's our motive? What are we trying to do? Yes? To restore our damaged ego, to reassert that we're in control. What else?
Get even.
Well, why do we want to get even? For what purpose?
We don't feel we deserved it.
We don't feel we deserve it, yeah. But what are we trying to achieve by hurting the other person in exchange?
Payback.
Payback. But why? What do we think we'll accomplish by payback?
Makes us higher.
Okay, it makes us higher, definitely. Yeah. That's one purpose. Do we hear someone saying, to feel that we are right? If I can hurt you back, that means that I'm right. What? Revenge, yeah, but why? What's driving us? What do we hope to accomplish through revenge?
Cover up the pain that we're suffering.
Okay. She's saying that someone hurt us, and therefore our false ego says they deserve pain also. But again, I'm trying to get at what's underlying this. What are we trying to get? What's our purpose? What is that? Okay, good. She's saying that we want them. Are you guys able to function with this? It's kind of strange. That we want them to feel what we feel. Why? Why do we want them to feel what we feel?
So they won't do it again.
So they won't do it again. Okay, so they won't do it again. So they'll know what it's like, that our pain's like, and they won't do it again. Why do we not want them to do it again? For whose benefit?
Maybe both.
For our own benefit, to protect us, yeah? Protect ourselves, and they won't hurt. They'll know what it feels like, and then they won't hurt us again. Teach them a lesson. Okay. So again, for whose benefit are we teaching them a lesson?
Could be for both.
Could be for both. Okay, so it could be for our protection, and it could be for them, so that they don't harm others, that they become a good person. All right. Now you can see how what's driving us is basically so I can be protected. And maybe what's also driving us is the benefit of the other person. That I'm thinking, I don't want this person to suffer by harming others. Let them learn a good lesson. Now, there must be some harm in acting like this. Otherwise, Prabhupada wouldn't call this kind of tit-for-tat silly. You know, someone hurts me, I hurt them. And then what happens after I hurt them? They want to hurt me again, right? This is what happens with Maharaj Purkit. Maharaj Purkit understands that the sage has hurt him. Was that true, that the sage hurt him, by the way?
The sage, his son did.
No, the sage initially. Was that a factual perception that this sage is insulting me?
No,
it wasn't factual. But Maharaj Purkit, his perception was, this sage had hurt me. On that basis, he wanted to hurt the sage. Then Sringi, seeing, oh, Parikit has hurt the sage, he wanted to hurt Parikit. And the whole thing escalates also. The so-called harm that the sage did to Parikit was less severe than what Parikit did to the sage, which was then less severe, much less severe, than what Sringi did to Parikit. Do you see it's escalating? And Parikit had the ability to then go back again, to counteract the curse on him and to hurt the Sringi or the sage some more, but he stopped it at that point. So Prabhupada says this is silly and that we shouldn't act like this. So you could say, well, why not? What is the problem with it? And the problem is explained also in relationship to Maharaj Purkit with Dharma the bull. So this is also a fascinating story where Maharaj Purkit sees this low-class person dressed up like a king, who's beating the cow and the bull. He sees it. It's happening right in front of his eyes. And he sees that the bull is only standing on one leg, that three legs have been broken or damaged in some way. And yet he asks the bull, who did this to you? Now, this seems to me like a very funny question. If I see somebody beating you, why would I look at you and say, who's done this to you? The answer seems to be rather obvious. But still, Maharaj Pariksit asks this question. And Dharma the bull, as the personification of religion, and some of the acharyas say that this cow and bull were not visible to ordinary people. They're divine personalities who were coming to tell Maharaj Pariksit in this form how the age of Kali was coming into the planet. It wasn't that it was just some ordinary cow and bull that anybody could see. But this bull, who's Dharma himself, religion himself, says, well, it's kind of hard to say who hit me. I'm not really sure. And he gives at least seven reasons for why we suffer. And one of the interesting things that the bull says is, if you name the perpetrator, you become as guilty as the perpetrator. Which is, on the face of it, an astonishing statement that doesn't seem to make any sense at all. It doesn't seem to make any more sense than why Maharaj Pariksit is asking him in the first place, who's hitting you? He says, if I say who's hitting me, then I'm going to be as guilty as the person who's hitting me. I'm going to be caught up in adharma. So there's not only is there harm in this tit for tat, there's harm even in saying this is the aggressor. Now, of course, Maharaj Pariksit does say, okay, hey, you're the aggressor. I'm going to kill you. You have no business beating innocent persons, what to speak of religion personified in my kingdom, and then Kali surrenders and so forth. So Maharaj Pariksit does, as the emperor, call out the offender. But what is this harm? It's such a great harm that we become like the person who's hurting us. You can see that's actually what happens. Somebody hurts me, I hurt them. They hurt me, I hurt them. They hurt me, I hurt them. I become just like them, don't I? And this can go on, by the way, life after life after life. When Maharaj Chitraketu's young son died, very young age, he said, maybe this child in a previous life was my enemy, and he has taken birth as my son and died as an early age just to give me pain. And we have the story of Amba and Bhishma, where Amba imagined, much like Maharaj Pariksit imagined, that Bhishma had harmed her. Bhishma had kidnapped three princesses to marry his brother, which was quite common behavior among the royal order at the time. And Amba said, well, I was already in love with somebody else. And in those days, if a woman was in love with someone else, then you let her marry who she loved. He says, all right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have taken you. Let me give you to the man that you love. And when arrangements were made to do that, the man she loved said, who was Shalva, said, I don't want anything to do with you. Bhishma kidnapped you for Vichitraveeriya, you're going to have to marry Vichitraveeriya. So instead of getting angry at Shalva, because she loved him, she got angry at Bhishma. She said, Bhishma, you're the one responsible for this situation. Now you have to marry me. He says, I can't. I've taken a vow that I'll never marry. She says, all right, then I'll kill you. Sweet, huh? Would you marry somebody who wanted to kill you? I mean, even if he hadn't taken a vow never to marry, it doesn't seem like it would have been a particularly happy marriage. So she says, I'm going to kill you. And
Oh, that's not... That's Ramananda's phone.
She wasn't able to kill him at that point in time, so she performed austerities. And she took another birth. And in that birth, even she wasn't able to kill him. Again, she performed austerities, took another birth. And in that birth, she wasn't able to kill Bhishma directly, but indirectly, she became a warrior man, Shikhandi, who was responsible for Bhishma's death. So, who did she harm? Who was the main person that she harmed? With this desire for vengeance.
Her own self.
She took birth after birth with her whole focus was, how am I going to hurt this other person? So guaranteed that when we desire to hurt those who hurt us, it entangles us in karma. It entangles us in the wheel of samsara. Your phone rang, Prabhu.
Is that one?
Yes, that's what happened. I declined the call. And after
the
that...
The one is in distress because it can't hear me.
Yes. So you just tell me what I'm supposed to do. It also brings out in us the very qualities. You know, we're thinking, well, this person hurt me. If I hurt them back, they'll know how I feel. And they won't hurt me again, either because they're scared of me. We had one student who was a bully, and I asked him, why do you hurt others? He said, well, I figure if I hurt them first, they'll stay away from me. They won't hurt me. A preemptive strike. Yeah. So either we hurt others because we want them to be scared and not hurt us again. Think, well, you know, if I mess with that arm, I'm going to get smashed, and therefore let me stay away from her and not hurt her. Sometimes you can hear devotees talking like that, won't you? Well, you know, someone who messes with me, they're really going to suffer because I'm a devotee. I've heard devotees talk like this. Or if it's somebody with whom we want to have a relationship, we may want them to suffer the pain so that they'll connect with us. They'll know how much they're hurting us, and they'll come say, oh, I'm sorry, actually I care about you, and so forth. Right? Or we can want to hurt them to teach them a lesson for themselves, which is, of course, a higher principle. But in any of these cases, we're bringing on the same sort of mentality. I want to hurt others. Which is exactly what we're criticizing in them. Isn't that interesting? We're saying, you bad person, that you wanted to hurt me. Okay, I want to hurt you. Wait a minute. Then I'm becoming the person who wants to hurt others. Therefore, Dharma the Bull says, as soon as you say, you hurt me, I want you to suffer, we get in that same mentality. And that mentality will take us to birth after birth after birth. When does it end? It only ends when one person says, I don't want to hurt you anymore. Correct? And I'll promise everybody who's here or listening somewhere that some of the relationships we've gone through in this life where people have hurt us doesn't start in this life. I can give a guarantee. That some situations where somebody's hurting us, where someone's acting as our enemy, did not start with something in this life. And I'm sure we all have situations where we can't at all understand why somebody's acting as our enemy, isn't it? Do you have people who are like, what did I do? I don't even know this person. Yes, I've had situations like that where people just like, they're out to get me. And I have no idea why. Some of them I've never met. I don't know them, I have nothing to do with them. I can't trace out anything that I've done to them. Yes? Or some people, you meet them, there's this just sort of intrinsic animosity. So if we continue this animosity, then we have to keep coming back to continue this animosity. I was just listening this morning for the second time to a class Robert gave on the 8th chapter of the first canto of the Prayers of Queen Kunti. And he talks about how whatever we want, Krishna will facilitate our having a body to fulfill those desires. That Krishna is very kind. And he's always fulfilling our desires. So if we desire to harm somebody, then Krishna will give us a situation where we can do that. So we have to ask, is this what I want to do? And then, of course, when we can harm them, guess what? Then they can harm us. And so forth, and so on, and so forth, and so on. Like Gandhi said, you know, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. So, we're going to go through some steps. This is a very practical workshop, and we're going to go through some steps and how we can get out of this, what Prabhupada calls very silly tit-for-tat cycle. Oh, we should mention another thing. You know, why is it we'll take root? Because we meditate on it, isn't it? Somebody hurts us, don't we meditate on that? We'll replay it over and over again. We'll tell the story over and over again to people. Oh, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And then yam yam bhavi swam bhavam trajacham tekalevam tam tam eva tikantiyan taratabham bhavitab. Are we thinking about Krishna? You know, it just is logical. I'm not thinking about Krishna. I'm thinking about Krishna Das, who hurt me. Krishna Dasi, who hurt me, you know. They did this. It was unfair. Or blah, 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 blah. Let me tell you my story. And nowadays it's let me tell you my story in my blog, or let me tell you my story in my, you know, some internet article. Let me tell everybody my story. Let me meditate on my story. So forth and so on. So, first step is let's look at the concept of justice. Let's look at the concept of justice. And if we care about justice, the first step in justice in a civilized society is called due process. When Maharaj Bhrigit was convinced that the sage had hurt him, Maharaj Bhrigit was wrong. The sage had not hurt him. The sage had not done anything to him at all. The sage was entranced and wasn't aware that Maharaj Bhrigit was there. Now later, Maharaj Bhrigit thought about that. Maybe he was really entranced. His first reaction was, this guy's faking it because he's a Brahmin and he thinks he's better than I am. That was his first reaction. Like Tringi's first reaction was, oh, he's the emperor, he thinks he's better than the Brahmanas. So our first response when somebody hurts us should be, am I sure I'm right? You know, we get very absorbed in our own version of the story. And you'll often hear people, again, even devotees, speaking about not only what the other person did, but what the other person's motives are. You know, this person did this to me, and that's because they are envious, they want my position, they hate me, isn't it? Right? They have all these stories about what's going on in the other person's consciousness. That's exactly what Maharaj Bhrigit did. He told this story. Well, he's a Brahmin and I'm a Kshatriya, so he thinks that even if I'm a thirsty guest, he doesn't have to respect me, so he's faking it. So the first step is stop telling these stories. We know what it's like when people tell these kind of stories about us, yes? Has anyone ever told these kind of stories about you? People have told these kind of stories about me. Well, Urmila's done this and this because she was thinking like this and like this and like this, and they were wrong. Yes? And it's painful. When someone says, you did this, and you did this because of this and this and this and this and this. Well, that wasn't what was going on at all. So first thing is due process. You know, when somebody accuses us, we want due process, yes? We don't want to just be accused. We want somebody to hear our story and find out the facts. So this is the beginning of moral principles. Do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. So first thing is due process. Find out the story. Listen to the other person. Try to understand their point of view. We were saying that one of the reasons we try to hurt those who hurt us is we want them to understand our point of view. Either so we'll scare them off or so we'll connect with them. Well, why don't we start by understanding their point of view? Why don't we do what we're asking them to do? So start out by understanding their point of view. It's quite interesting that often when somebody apparently hurts us, their motive, their intentions may be 100%, 180 degrees opposite. You haven't thought of them. So there's a good example. So Ramananda just disrupted the class. So what were his intentions? His intentions are to expand the class, not to disrupt it. You follow? So his intentions are the opposite of what apparently he did. Does that make sense to everybody? Satchinanda Maharaj tells the story of how one time when he was speaking to a large group, there were people in the back who were whispering and talking the whole time. And he was getting more and more and more and more irritated as the class went on. And what do you think he found out they were actually doing?
Translating.
So first thing is due process. Again, I know that there's many times that people get upset with me when my intentions are the opposite of what they're assuming that they are. When I'm trying to be helpful and I'm trying to be caring, and somehow the person understands my actions and my intentions opposite to what I'm doing. You okay?
They're saying get closer.
Get closer.
No. Forget it.
This is not
that
working.
And
I'm sitting here with that in my ear.
You need my phone?
What would you like?
No, it's okay.
Get
nothing,
closer to
what? I'm just going to bring this close to you.
Okay. Well, Prabhupada says one of the purposes of the Hare Krishna movement is to bring the members closer to each other. Here, everybody's sitting over there so they can lean on the wall. It's kind of an odd situation. So anyway, that's the first thing, due process. Instead of insisting the other person connect with me and understand me, why don't I try to connect with them and understand them? Oh, how radical. Now, let's say that I do due process. Even in that case, okay, we'll go on a little bit. So let's say you do process and I discover that they're wrong. I discover that they really did want to hurt me and they were really envious and so forth and so on. Does that still mean the person should be punished? Now, who has the right to punish?
Someone who's in a position.
So then I ask myself the question, am I in the position of punishing this person? And it's a similar thing we talked about at the end yesterday. Am I this person's parent? Am I this person's teacher? Am I this person's employer? Am I a government officer? Is it my business to punish them? And what we'll sometimes do is say, well, I don't care whose business it is, I'm going to punish them anyway. But that's not the view of a servant, Jivara Swaprayut Krishna Nicha Dasha. A servant means I stay within the boundaries of my service. I don't do somebody else's service. I don't encroach on somebody else's position. And again, when it's reversed, we feel that way. If I heard something, I don't want just some random person to punish me. You know, I want to be dealt with not only by due process, but I want to be dealt with by the proper authorities. So let's say you are a proper authority. Let's say you really are in the position where you're a representative of Krishna in that relationship. Even then, one doesn't always punish. So this is a nice quote from Prahlad Maharaj. This is from the Mahabharata Vanaparva. One day, Bali approached Prahlad and asked, which is actually meritorious, forgiveness or the use of strength? Prahlad Maharaj says, neither forgiveness nor the use of prowess is meritorious in all situations. If one were to always forgive, then his servants, dependents, enemies, and even strangers would disrespect him. When one always forgives, then mean-minded servants gradually steal away all of his wealth and fail to respond to his commands. On the other hand, one who simply punishes and never forgives soon finds himself to be bereft of all friends. Indeed, everyone comes to hate such an unforgiving person, and when there is the slightest opportunity, they do something to harm him. Therefore, the conclusion is that prowess and forgiveness should be exhibited at the proper times. My dear Bali, the following person should be forgiven. One who has done nice service in the past, even if guilty of a grave fault. One who offends simply due to ignorance or folly. One who is a first-time offender. One who has committed some wrong against his will. In addition, other offenders may sometimes be forgiven just to create a good public image. The following person should not be forgiven. One who is knowingly offended and yet claims to be innocent, even if his offense is slight, and a second offender, no matter how small the crime. So this is advice for a person in authority
who has to deal with, should I give out some sort of punishment as justice? Now, what is the mood of justice? Who's supposed to be benefited? The person who's being punished is supposed to be benefited, so they'll be rectified, and they won't be hurting themselves. And then society in general is supposed to be benefited, that this person is not going to give harm to society. The person who's meeting out justice is not acting for a personal vendetta, or should not be acting, isn't it? The symbol of justice is the blind woman, the blindfolded woman. And if a person has a personal stake in a case, they're supposed to recuse themselves. If you can't serve on a jury if you have a personal stake in what's going on. Even if you've had a personal situation that's similar to the crime. At least it's nice music. Even if you've experienced a similar crime, you're not supposed to be on the jury. Because then you're going to be thinking of, you know, how can I protect myself? So the person meeting out justice has to be detached. We call disinterested, not uninterested, but disinterested. They shouldn't have anything personal to gain from whether or not the guilty party is punished. They should have a factual position of authority, not vigilante justice. And even then, they should decide whether to punish or not punish, depending on different circumstances. Even then, a guilty party is not always punished. So first thing when somebody offends us, somebody hurts us, is find out, did they actually hurt us? Maybe they didn't really hurt us at all. Or maybe they didn't intend to hurt us. Maybe they were trying to help us. I don't have time, but there's so many stories like that in the traditional literature of all countries about how we assume that someone's trying to hurt us and we find out the opposite was the case. So that's the first thing to do. The next thing to do is if the person did really hurt us, and if justice needs to be done, am I the proper person to give justice? And if I am, then I decide, okay, is this person to be punished or not? If I'm not, I can refer the person to the proper authorities. I can call the police, or I can go to whoever is responsible for justice. But justice is a detached thing by the proper person for the good of the offender and for the good of society. Not for my personal ego and not for my personal protection. So now we're going to go on and that whoever was wrong, you've done due process, you've gone through that, but whoever was wrong, we can still have this feeling of being offended, isn't it? It's kind of a funny thing. What do we do with this? Now, in order to do what I'm going to talk about, these steps, the foundation has to be that Krishna's protecting me. Because our urge for vengeance is based on fear. It's based on fear that I don't want to get hurt again. I want the score to be even. And just a little aside, which I do not anyway have time to go into, we also want things to be even when we've been the offender, by the way. And even that will force us to take birth again. So if I've been the offender and I feel, you know, I have to rectify this, I have to even the score, we can also take birth again, not only to have other people pay their debts to us, which is what I talked about in the beginning, but so we can pay our debts. And this also we should abandon. We shouldn't be urged to continue this cycle in the material world, but I don't have time to get into that, sorry, at all. So we're just going to look at other people paying their debts to us, but please be aware that our thinking about paying off our karmic debts to others will also pull us into samsara. This whole thing of karmic debt is just a big monopoly game. That's all it is. It's just a monopoly game. It's not real. It's an illusion. It's real in the sense that it exists, but it's not the reality. And this whole idea of you owe me and I owe you, and it's a game. We are allowed to quit the game. You're not allowed to stay in the game and cheat, but you're allowed to quit the game and get out of the cycle of you owe me, I owe you. Okay, So we start thinking Krishna's going to take care of me. Krishna's going to protect me. I do not need to hurt this person for my protection. Again, I see that there's two ways we're trying to feel protected. One is by making the person afraid of us, that I better not hurt this person because I'll suffer, which is a real false ego, mode of passion and mode of ignorance kind of thinking. Or I'm going to protect myself by hurting this person, and that way they'll have compassion on me and they'll want to connect with me, which is a little bit more mode of passion, mode of goodness kind of thinking. But either way, we're thinking about our own safety. So in order to really practice forgiveness, one has to give to the person who protects our surety of being protection, of being protected. One has to give it to Krishna. One has to say, Krishna, you protect me. Mari Krishna, Raki K, Raki Krishna, Mari K. I'm sure we've all had experience that there are people who try to hurt us and they can't. Yes? Have we all had people in our lives, they really try to hurt us and somehow they can't. It's like we're in a plexiglass bubble and they just can't do anything. Have we had this experience? Sometimes people can be very, very vicious and they work really, really hard to damage us in some way and they just can't. It just doesn't work. I'm sure we've had experience the other way too, where we try to hurt somebody and we're not effective. We just can't do it. So if Krishna doesn't let somebody hurt us, they can't hurt us. But, you know, it works the other way, too. If Krishna wants us to go through something, he'll allow someone to be the instrument of our karma, or the instrument of his will. So we put our protection in the hands of the only person who can protect us, and the only person who is protecting us anyway, which is Krishna. We say, Krishna, you're protecting me. You got to do that. If you don't do that, nothing else we're talking about is going to work. It just won't work. You won't be able to do it. You'll try to do it in a mechanical process, and you'll fail. So if you're trying to do this and you fail, it's because you haven't done this first step. A Krishna will protect me. So this is whether you're right, they're right, whatever, whatever the result of due process, or even if you don't go through due process, which I think you shouldn't be doing anymore. Krishna's protecting me. Krishna's protecting me. Krishna's protecting me. If somebody has hurt me, that's because Krishna has allowed them to hurt me. And this is one of the reasons Dharma the Bull gave for not naming the perpetrator. He says, because the ultimate perpetrator is Krishna. You want to blame him? No. Right? So therefore, we say, Krishna is the one who's protecting me. So, if Krishna's allowing this to happen, which he has, Krishna's allowed somebody to do something which hurt me in some way, well, he must have some reason. He must have some purpose. Krishna is my friend. Suvrindam Sarvabhutana. If Krishna allows some harm to come from me, to come to me, it must not really be harm. Just like when the parent takes the toy away from the child. Why would a parent take a toy away from a child? Parents buy toys for their children. Why would they take them away? They have some higher purpose in life. It's time for dinner. Or the child's going to break the toy, or the child's going to hit their brother on the head with the toy, or something like that. Right? It's time to go home from the beach. Whatever. There's some higher purpose in life for the benefit of the child. So what's Krishna's purpose? There can be several. One purpose can be to mirror ourselves. I really like it that the psychic Edgar Casey said that karma is mirroring ourselves. I talk about this many times, that I found very directly that what I'm getting back, I'm giving out. That if people treat me in a certain way that I don't like, most likely, I'm also doing that to somebody else without realizing it. Because I can be doing it in a different way, in a different context, to a different person. So it doesn't look the same to me. I mean, somebody might be inconsiderate of me, but can I ask, am I ever inconsiderate of anybody? Who's prepared to say I'm never inconsiderate of somebody? Maybe I'm not inconsiderate in the same way, or to the same person, or under the same circumstances, but I may be equally inconsiderate. Or somebody was irresponsible. They didn't come through on what they said. They said they'd meet me at 4 o'clock and they didn't show up. So again, maybe whenever I say I'm going to be there at 4 o'clock, I am, but maybe there's other ways in which I'm irresponsible. I mean, if we stop and think, am I ever irresponsible? Do I ever let anybody down? Is anybody prepared to say, I never let anybody down? Anybody prepared to say that? I always fulfill all of my promises to everybody, all the time, no matter what. Who's going to say that? But yet if somebody doesn't fulfill their promise to me, I can get so offended. So I have found this to be often the case with me and with people that I see around me, that the very thing that someone's doing to me, I do to others. But I don't see my fault, I see their fault. So I can use when somebody hurts me as the chance to look in the mirror. Now, I will say here that I have not found it effective to look in the mirror with your mind. The mind is a liar. So if you ask your mind, how do I do this to others? Your mind will cheat you. It will either tell you that you don't do it to anybody else. You hear that all the time. Well, I would never do this to anybody. Yes? Do you hear this? I would never do anything. What this person did to me, I would never do anything like that. And the mind is a liar. It will tell you you don't do anything like that. You'll be looking for something that looks exactly the same. And the mind will say, see, you don't do exactly that. Or the mind will divert you and show you something that's not related. And say, oh, over here is your problem. The mind cannot be trusted. So how you find out if you've done that to others is you ask Krishna, please reveal to me any way in which I am doing this to others. And that will show up in the heart. I have a nice example here. Jivasa Muni, we're short on time, so I can't get into it too much. But so I hope you all know the story. Jivasa Muni came to the house of King Ambarish, and he came when it was time to break Ekadasi. King Ambarish said, would you like something to eat? Jivasa Muni said, I want to take a bath first, which is normal after you travel, so I went to take a bath. While he was taking a bath, breakfast time came, and King Ambarish had to make a decision immediately, so he drank some water to break his fast. Although in Vedic times, you didn't eat before your guest. So Jivasa Muni came back. By his mystic power, he was able to understand that the king has drunk water before he's fed me. His response, by his mystic power, to create a demon to kill the king. An escalation, we were talking about before, that these things tend to escalate. You know, you hurt me a little bit, and I hurt you a lot, then you hurt me a lot. It's one of the problems with this sort of thing. It really escalates. And we also see here the same situation where Ambarish didn't really offend Durvasa at all, but Durvasa had this whole story. He didn't give Ambarish due process. He jumped to the conclusion that an offense had been made. But now listen to what he says here. This is from 9.4.43. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved, and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. Who's being cruel? Durvasa's being cruel. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Who's acting like not a devotee of Lord Vishnu? Being proud of his material opulence and his position, who's being proud? He considers himself God. Who's thinking he's God and he can punish people? Just see how he's transgressed the laws of religion. So again, he was really talking about himself. He had done all those things. So after going through due process, no matter who's right and who's wrong, Krishna is going to protect me. Why has he let this happen to me? He loves me. Maybe he wants to show me what it feels like to do this to others. Right? Wasn't that one of our reasons for wanting to hurt people so they could feel like what it means to hurt us and they could get some empathy? Well, maybe Krishna's doing that. Maybe Krishna's saying, hey, you do this, and this is what it feels like. Why don't you stop? This is what it feels like. This is what you're doing. Right, now, sometimes it's not exactly what we're doing to others. Although I found in my own experience with myself and others, I find about 80-90% of the time when others hurt us, we are hurting others in some way. That's very similar. And that's generally the case, that we're getting back what we're putting out. That's a very safe assumption. Take that as a safe assumption. I am doing this to somebody in some form. Krishna, please reveal to me how I'm doing it so I can rectify. But there are times when that's not the case. There are times when we are really, where we haven't been guilty of the same thing. Then we can ask Krishna, what's my lesson? What are you trying to teach me? Maybe he's trying to teach us patience, maybe he's trying to teach us humility, maybe he's trying to teach us compassion. We can ask, what is it that I'm supposed to learn here? So this is the case no matter who's exactly at fault. Suppose by due process we find out the other person is fully wrong. Fully and completely wrong. And by the way, that doesn't happen very often. This is an unusual circumstance. Generally, we've misunderstood them, we've misunderstood their intentions, we haven't yet connected with them. If we've done all that, then we've relied on Krishna as our protector, and I've asked Krishna what you're trying to teach me and all that. Suppose I figure out, I'm not doing this to anybody else, and there's no lesson for me to learn here at all. I'm completely, totally, 100% a victim. My dear friends, that is very, 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 very rare. It happens, but it's extremely rare. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he was completely a victim. He didn't have some lesson to learn. He wasn't doing it to anybody else. You follow? Hiranyakashipu was totally in the wrong. So in that case, also, we rely on Krishna as our protector. And then what do we do? We do something called forgiveness. Now, this forgiveness is often very misunderstood as saying, nothing bad happened. Nothing bad happened. Really, you weren't wrong. And blah, blah, blah. We've already gone through all that. That if really the other person wasn't wrong, or really I had my lesson to learn, and so forth. But if that's not the case, what does it mean that we still forgive? So let's look at Prahlad Maharaj, who is completely, 100% an innocent victim. And what does he say? Okay, 7:9:14. He says, "But my Lord Nrisingadev, please therefore cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon." Does he say, "Oh, my father didn't do anything wrong"? Is that what he's saying? Is he a fool? 7:9:26. Now we're going to look at 7:10:15:17. Prahlad Maharaj says, "O Supreme Lord, because you are so merciful to the fallen souls, I ask you for only one benediction. I know that my father at the time of his death had already been purified by your glance upon him, but because of his ignorance of your beautiful power and supremacy, he was unnecessarily angry at you, falsely thinking that you were the killer of his brother. Thus he directly blasphemed your lordship." Here's again this escalation. Hiranyakashipu thinks that Vishnu is guilty and therefore he tries to punish him. "Thus he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. I wish that he be excused for these sinful activities." So Prahlad Maharaj understands that his father did something wrong, terribly wrong. So forgiveness does not mean nothing bad happened. It does not mean this person is innocent. It's not what it means. But what is Prahlad Maharaj saying? He's saying, "I want my father to be purified." He says, "I know he's already purified." Prabhupada explains in the purport to this verse. He says, "I know at the time of his death, my father's already been purified by your glance. He's already purified, but I just want to make sure. Please make sure he's purified." Whose benefit is Prahlad Maharaj thinking about? His father's. He's not thinking about his benefit. Why? Because Krishna's already protecting him. He doesn't have to think about his benefit. He gives his benefit to the hands of the Lord. Krishna, wherever you save me, whatever, you want to kill me, somebody, whatever you want to do, that's your business. You want to do something through my father, you want to kill me through my father, that's your business. I accept. I'm not worried about my own protection. As I said, you've got to do that first. You've got to put your protection in Krishna's hands first. Otherwise, our fear will push us towards vengeance. One cannot be forgiving if one's full of fear. It just doesn't work. So I say, Krishna, I know you're going to take care of me, and I care about my father. I want him to be taken care of. Therefore, I want him to be purified. I want him to be rectified without suffering. That's the essence of forgiveness. I want the person to be rectified without suffering. If you want to put what is forgiveness in a nutshell, I want the other person to be rectified without suffering. I want the other person to be rectified for their sake, not for my protection, without suffering. So, how many of us have learned a lesson after going through some suffering or some miserable situation, but at the end we learn something valuable? How many? Okay? And how many of us have learned a very valuable lesson in some blissful way? We just read something in a purport and we went, oh, you know, some nice situation, some happy situation, we learned a valuable lesson. How many of you have done that? Which way would you rather learn?
Blissful.
By the way, sometimes I ask this and people tell me they'd rather learn through pain, which is interesting psychologically. Well, guess what? What we desire for others is what we get. Another good reason to forgive. 4.8.17, Suniti says to Dhruva, don't wish for anything inauspicious to others. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain. Ever wonder why many of our lessons are learned in a painful way? Have you ever said to Krishna, can't you teach me just through joy? You ever said that? Why do these lessons have to hurt so much? You ever ask that question? Tell you one reason. There's two reasons I can think of, but one of them is that we want our enemies to learn through pain. Anytime we desire our so-called enemy to learn through pain, we're setting up a system where we're going to learn through pain. So even if we're totally 100% selfish and we couldn't give one fig about the other person, want them to learn through joy. Even if we're selfish. If we want our enemies to learn through joy, guarantee, I'll give you an ironclad guarantee, that a lot of your learning will turn to joyful. There's other reasons why we learn through pain, because we're so stubborn that when Krishna tries to teach us through joy, we don't listen. That's another reason. But a big reason is that we desire harm for others. If someone has hurt me, I hope they suffer. Or we immediately try to harm them back. But even the desire for them to suffer, even the desire for them to suffer sets up a chain where we will learn through suffering. But of course, if we're not a selfish person, if we're really a devotee, I mean, it's not that hard to wear a sari or a dhoti. It's a little hard in Hawaii because you become kind of a freak. But it's not that hard, you know, to put on a piece of cloth and put some clay on your head and put some wooden beads around your neck and walk around with a bead bag. But to be a real devotee is a little harder. So a real devotee doesn't want anything inauspicious for others because they actually, like Krishna, are Suridam Sarvadehinam. They're everyone's friend. And they don't want anyone to suffer, as Krishna says in the 6th chapter. They see everyone like themselves. I don't want to learn through pain. Why should I want you to learn through pain? Just the reverse. Right? Somebody hurts me. Oh, you've hurt me. I want you to learn through as much pain as I have, or more. But rather, I wish you had treated me nicely. Let me treat you the way I wish you had treated me. Let me give for you what I would like to have. Just by the way, that often engenders empathy also. Therefore, you know, in Christianity, Jesus says, love your enemies, bless those that curse you, pray for those who harm you. You know, we like to say that Christianity is an inferior religious system. What we should at least be doing as well as Jesus taught. Huh? We shouldn't be doing worse than. And I don't have time, but that's what started me on this journey, was reading the true story of one Christian woman in the former Soviet Union, who was beaten by an agent of the KGB simply for praying. and whose response was, "Dear Lord, please forgive him." And it was that story that started me on this journey, because I had always put forgiveness up in the category of Prahlad Maharaj, and said, "Well, someday when I'm like Prahlad Maharaj in 10,000 million births, then I'll start forgiving people." And when I read that story, I thought, you know, this is just some person walking around on the planet who doesn't even understand that, you know, God is Krishna, and she can be forgiving. So again, practicing forgiveness, it's a simple several-step procedure. The simplest, easiest thing is, Krishna's protecting me. Anyone who hurts me must have the sanction of Krishna. Let them learn their lesson without suffering. Let them learn their lesson through joy. That's your easy 10-second process. The deeper process is, let me give the person due process. Let me connect with them. Let me find out what's really going on. Let me see if they really intended to hurt me. Let me find out the backstory. Let me give them the kind of justice that I would like to have. If they should be punished by law, let me turn it over to the proper person. If I'm the proper person, let me see whether or not punishment would be helpful to this person and society in this case. If Krishna is allowing me to be hurt, what does he want from me? Is he using this person as a mirror? And my dear Lord, please show me if I'm doing this to others. Is he using this to give me some lesson? What can I take away from this? But regardless, I desire the other person to learn through joy. Even if I have to give the person over to the police, and even if the person has to, by the law of the land, go to jail, my desire is for them to learn through joy. I take no happiness in their suffering, and I don't desire them to suffer. When we do this, we're free from the whole tit-for-tat cycle. We walk away from the monopoly game. Then nobody owes us, we don't owe anybody. We're not wrapped up in this. We will not have to suffer a reaction ourselves. We won't have our mind polluted with hatred. We won't have our mind polluted with fear and have Krishna pushed out of our mind. We don't have to worry about our own safety by hurting others, ever. Turning someone over to the police or the proper authorities may be our duty, but our safety is in the hands of God. And just like we were talking yesterday about humility, when one practices forgiveness, really what it does is it opens the door to your own freedom. Now, just another corollary question, people may say, well, do I have to trust that particular person again? No, you're not supposed to be a fool. But that doesn't mean you wish any harm for them. So if you've had some business dealings with somebody and they cheated you, it doesn't mean that you turn around and, you know, give them your money again. But you don't wish any harm for them. You only wish good for them. Let this person learn through joy, just as I want to learn through joy. So, Krishna, is there something I'm supposed to learn from this? Is there something you're showing me through this? What am I supposed to learn? And let this, whatever this other person has to learn, let them learn through joy. I wish I could go on, and I wish we could have a discussion, but it is time for Harinam Sankirtan, and therefore we have to end. Thank you very much.
All
glories to Srila Prabhupada.